providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Here to wrap up the weekend edition of the KE Report, we're going to focus on a couple bigger picture themes here. As we spent the first part of this show talking about the crazy market volatility and what's driving a lot of the weakness across the board, we're going to step back. We are chatting with Axel Merk, President and Chief Investment Officer of Merk Investments. Now, Axel, you recently attended a conference, the Hoova Monetary Conference. There in attendance were some Fed speakers and also some events that you got to go to with some of these Fed heads where you got to ask some questions. And I think you got a couple more insights into the monetary policy and also just what's going through some key heads of the Fed. Axel, can you give us a little summary here? I've never attended this conference, but what were some of the key takeaways that you garnered from that conference?
Yeah, great to be with you, Corey. Well, it's sponsored by the Hoover Institution. And those who know Hoover can imagine that this is kind of a love fest of the hawks, of those who like tougher policy. That said, not all the speakers are hawks. And that's exactly what makes it so interesting, that you have some pretty sharp exchange of views. And Jim Bullard, who used to be dovish and now is all hawkish, the St. Louis Fed president, he's the guy who dissented. He spoke quite actively, both in asking questions and being on the panel and whatnot. And I mean, the hawkish view, I think, is well known, that the Fed is behind the curve. Indeed, that was a big theme of the conference. And Jim Bullard explained, yeah, we are very much behind the curve based on these metrics. But if we look at it differently, we're only a little bit behind the curve. And so that was a broad theme. There was a lot of talk about the risk of stagflation as well, a word that people would have scoffed at a while. But what really got me concerned or worried wasn't so much that there were quote-unquote dovish people, but the reasons and arguments that they gave why they think everything is going to be just fine. And if you want me to, I can expand on that a bit.
Well, Axel, I would be interested to hear why they thought it was just fine in the face of 8.5 CPI inflation, and they just got off the mat with their first 0.25% and their 50 basis points. So they've got 0.75% of a percentage point on the Fed funds rate now. But they've never been this far behind the curve. And we're seeing weakness in the markets. We're seeing geopolitical turmoil. We're seeing a slowdown in GDP growth. So how was it that some people thought everything was going to be okay?
Yeah, well, it's the transitory theme. And they don't use that word anymore because that's been poo-pooed on. But that's basically what it is. It's not just these numbers you mentioned. Even if you look at inflation expectations over the next 10 years are now around 3%, which is huge. But the doves shrug it off, saying, yeah, we have high inflation now, but it comes down, and then it just happens to average it at 3%. Then the geopolitical risks, they said, when I asked, well, what about famine around the world because of 30% of wheat exports being off the market, political instability, says, yeah, but that's not going to have any spillover effects to the U.S., and we don't need to worry about it too much. But most importantly, the key dovish argument is that the rates are rising and the market is pricing in higher rates in a year and two. And that tighter market being priced in down the road is going to be sufficient that everything is going to play out okay. Now, the main argument against that and the one who articulated it best was Larry Summers. You might remember him, former U.S. Treasury Secretary, always likes to be a gadfly in things. But what he pointed out is kind of the obvious. We have almost two job openings for each job seeker. This is as hot a job market as it has rarely, if ever, been, which means we have a completely overheating economy, and we simply cannot afford to wait a year until rates are higher. Because the way inflation works, it's not like a light switch that you can turn it on and off. And so that is the huge, huge problem that we have. And then so Larry is obviously not on the Fed. He would like to have that job. And then, by the way, he, as you may recall, he was close in the running to be Fed chair several years ago. But since he's quite a polarizing figure, he then didn't make it. But yeah, the dovish view is that things will be all right. And one of the concerns I have, of course, Shad, you pointed out, is with the geopolitical risks we have, not everything is going to be perfect. There is a little potential that something is going to get messed up along the way. And so we just don't have that luxury of hoping for the best. I like to say that hope is not a very good policy.
Hope is not a good policy, but when it comes to the Fed, though, they talk about their dual mandate that deals with employment, also deals with the economy. And the Fed always tries to say, well, we're not paying attention to the markets. That's not part of our job. But they do seem to be. Any takeaways of what is impacting Fed policy the most in your eyes?
Well, it wasn't so much discussed at that conference, but just a quick work on their fear or thought about the markets. What they care about is dislocations in the market. And so the whole idea, of course, of raising rates is to, quote unquote, tighten monetary conditions, to make it more difficult to access funding. And you see that, of course, in mortgage rates, junk bonds should have a higher spread, a higher yield versus regular rates. But what they don't want the dislocations. And part of that, you see, I like to refer to the Eurozone. You may remember there used to be a crisis in the Eurozone. And when rates go up, the Italian bonds yield more than the German bonds. But when there's a crisis, then there's a flight into German bonds and a flight out of the Italian bonds. And so that then creates a breakup risk. So translated to the US, you don't want the wheels to fall off the wagon. That's what they're concerned about. They're not too concerned about, oh, yeah, sure, there's a sell-off in the bond market. But you don't want that sort of dislocation. As far as what they were mostly concerned about at the conference, the Noves weren't terribly concerned, I don't think. They were concerned about the best press they're getting about the high inflation. They do say, yes, they need to hike more, but they are still in this camp. I like to call it amputating a leg by starting with a big toe. That's just not how you amputate a leg. And I'm not a medical doctor, but it does seem to be the wrong way to go about it. And so similarly, at the Fed, it doesn't seem to be the most productive way to gradually raise rates, even if they now do these half percentage hikes.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, Axel, that they're taking off one toe at a time instead of just chopping the leg off. And even if they did 100 basis point hikes four times in a row, we'd still have negative real rates when you and adjust it for inflation. And so, again, as they continue down this road of, let's say, 50 basis point hikes, a lot of market commentators are worried that we're going to see a continued slowdown in growth and persistently high inflation, even if it starts trending lower. Prices are going to remain high. So I know you've brought up the term stagflation. We hear that a lot. We also hear the potential of a recession. We hear some people say it's an inflationary depression, or some people are saying we're now in deflationary forces with a high dollar and the stock market's correcting. Help us make sense of it. Where are we at in this economic theory, Axel?
Well, instability, I think, is the key term here. When what happens is, of course, the Fed is not going to sit there and say, oh, inflation is going through the roof. We're not going to do anything. No, as you see, right? They start talking more. They start hiking a quarter point and then half a point. And they'll do more. But because they're not getting in front of the problem, you're creating this instability in the market. You're creating these gyrations because as they tighten more, as you point out, there's a risk of a recession, and then there's the expectation that they'll reverse course. And so all of that creates an ever more difficult environment, not just for the Fed, but also for investors, as we've seen with the gyrations in the market.
So Axel, what do you think about this whole concept of stagflation then? Is stagflation here? Is it coming? We hear a lot about it, but we've heard a lot about it over the last decade. What's your take on that?
Well, you and I may have talked about it for a while, but in the mainstream media, it was kind of a word that you were laughed at if you were using it. Oh, it's not the 1970s because the market is so different. We don't need to worry about it. And sure enough, there were several academic presentations at that conference I attended where they talked specifically about stagflation risk. And by the way, the key problem is if you take the 1970s and look at the Dow, because the Dow was kind of the predominant index at the time, it nominally kind of with gyrations kind of went through the later half of the 70s. But on a real basis, when you discount, take out the inflation that was caused, you lost significant amount of money. So it's very, very difficult to hide. And some of the places that you're able to hide in the 70s, and that is presumably a decent place to hide, is real estate. Oil obviously did well. Gold did well at the end of the day. And so those sort of things may do well. And of course, nowadays you have inflation protected securities as well. None of that is kind of the perfect solution to any environment, but you can try to at least diversify your portfolio a little bit with some of those. You can look at that and see whether that's worthwhile. But there is no silver bullet. That's the short answer.
Yeah, Axel, a lot of people are wondering where they can go hide to ride out the storm. But we have seen higher energy prices like the 1970s, and we definitely are seeing higher inflation. A lot of people say, hey, it's not nearly as high as it was in the 70s, but it's also coming from where the Fed only wanted 2%. And we've shot way past that now, about four times as much. So we do have that component. I guess the piece that people would push back on the stagflation argument is we don't really have high unemployment right now. So how do you think that labor part factors into the equation?
No, I mean, not saying we are smack in the middle of stagflation, but there's a risk of that, of course, right? If the Fed does what they're supposed to be doing, they will slow down the economy. Unemployment has to increase to bring supply and demand into balance. Now, maybe we're quote unquote lucky that equity markets crash. And all the folks that retired early because they made so much money during the lockdowns are now coming back to the labor force. So that might be a way of rescuing us. So there are obviously different ways that all of this can play out.
Axel, when it comes to the high inflation aspect, how do you view the consumer right now? Because the consumer helped to drive higher inflation when the COVID lockdown started to subside. But now they've run out of the free money that was given to them, and we're seeing higher credit card debt. You would think eventually the consumer, the demand side of the inflation equation, is going to reach some peak.
Well, we see some of that. There's some anecdotal evidence that people are hoarding inventories, right? Because everybody buys so much, it's difficult to get anything. And so in some places you've hoarded stuff. And now the consumer says, well, I bought enough for the next 2 years. And so that's part of that instability that I'm referring to, right? And then the folks who have that inventory selling it are going to dump it. And so there is going to be a back and forth. And all of that, again, it creates some sort of instability in various markets.
Well, Axel, we also hear about both the demand pull inflation and the cost push inflation. And so the demand coming from the consumers and the buying and the pent-up demand coming out of the pandemic, but also the cost push where the higher commodities prices that we're seeing really across the board, even though they've pulled back some, they're still pretty high compared to where they were, let's say, a year or two ago. And companies need to pass those prices along to consumers. So consumers are kind of getting hit on both ends. They're not getting the freebie liquidity from the government. They're seeing higher prices at the gas pump and the grocery store on their services they subscribe to. How much of it is that, or how much of it is the root cause of inflation, which is really excessive liquidity and excessive money supply?
Well, it's excessive liquidity, money supply, a big contributing factor. Fiscal helicopter drop is certainly a big contributing factor. When you write $1,400 checks to people, they're going to spend that money. Right? Not everybody, but those who need that money will spend it on essentials. And that's why the essential goods inflation is there. We have the wage pressures on top of that. So, but yes, it's ultimately what the Fed theoretically should have done is when those checks were written, they should have raised rates. But of course, they didn't. And then they were dragging their heels and waited. And now at least 9 months behind the curve.
Axel, what about other central banks, though? How are they contributing to this overall environment that is potentially leading us towards stagflation?
Well, if there's some good news, is that we have a greater dispersion. We got the Europeans that are still dragging their heels, or at least the Eurozone. There's a lot of pressure that they'll hike, and they might do so in the third quarter, maybe even early in the third quarter. But we've had several central banks around the world hike rates, including New Zealand, Australia, and other places. And so the good news for investors is that we are finally away from being glued to zero everywhere, which also means, of course, we have greater volatility, and not just because the Fed is behind the curve, but simply because there are different opportunities around the world. The age of everything kind of flatlined is probably over.
Well, Axel, as investors get more defensive, some have gone into dividend-paying stocks, some have sought refuge in the U.S. dollar. But you mentioned a couple of those sectors, whether it be, you know, the real estate market, oil and gas, gold, the TIPS protected securities. Do you think that those will be spared if we do get a continued sell everything environment, or will they eventually diverge from the general markets and present a alternate track for investors to take?
Well, for full disclosure, as you know, and some of your listeners may know, we recently launched the Merck Stagflation ETF. It's an exchange traded product where we invest in oil and gold and real estate and inflation protected securities. And the reason we put this ETF together is precisely because we think that might be one way investors can potentially diversify. Now, do we know that these things will do well in the environment that's forthcoming? Of course not. But we have many, many drivers that are supportive of that. And so we engineered a rules-based ETF that mimics some of the things that we had in the 1970s that did well in those days. And we are fully aware that we are, of course, not in the 1970s environment, but there's a reason they did well. And if you take just real estate, for example, the rents will move higher as an inflationary push. And so that will increase the income for those real estate investment trusts, for example. And we're not making an investment recommendation here, but we put an ETF together because we are concerned about what's out there and pretty much to give investors a tool that they have so that they can look at that compared to all the other choices that they have out there.
So Axel, just to bring everybody up to speed, that inflation ETF that you guys just launched straight on the NYSE under the symbol STGF. What's your assessment of the demand for a stagflation product? Obviously, you see an avenue for people wanting to invest in it and an environment for stagflation. What's some of the feedback been?
Well, the feedback has been very good. When we first filed for it, the nerds that look at these filings were all over it. We got some media coverage way before we launched. And now that we're in the market, there are a lot of people talking about it. We obviously, as I mentioned, we see hear Fed officials talk about it. It's the stagflation. They obviously don't tout our product there. But we are the first stagflation-themed ETF. And I am afraid that we may be onto something. So we'll see, right? We'll see what environment we'll be in, and it's something where we believe that investors should have a tool. And so rather than just talk, which many people do, we actually act. We put something together and see whether that's going to be something that investors will embrace. And so far, it looks very much so.
All right, Axel, we'll wrap it up here. Very interesting new stagflationary product. And also thank you for breaking down what you heard at the HUVA Monetary Conference. So much depends still on the Fed and other central banks around the world, from markets down to the economy and down to individual pocketbooks, thanks to just how active and still free it seems like these central banks are to create money. But boy, oh boy, what a wild year it has been already. And you combine that with the ongoing volatility and, quite frankly, pullback in all asset classes. Not pretty for investors. Axel, thank you for taking time on this weekend show. Everybody, thank you for tuning in on the weekend show. Hopefully next week, a little bit better week for the markets. But boy, oh boy, the trend still seems to be to more of a build cash position than anything. So we'll see what the rest of this month and the rest of this year leads to us. Axel, thanks again for your time. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend.
Have a great weekend.